Hey guys, how are y'all doing? Y'all are listening to the Day Tripper Podcast, episode 54, kind of a more serious topic we got today, but it's going to be a good one. I hope y'all enjoy it. I'm joined by Cody Hurt and Brad Stripmeyer, Matter, five T's in one last name, but they do a lot of things. One, they're the owners of Mesquite Creek, but more importantly, with Hurricane Harvey, they were on the front lines of the recovery. So thanks for joining us, guys.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And let's get the podcast going. All right. Before we jump in, got to thank our sponsor, the City of Tomball. Of course, they're part of the greater Houston area. They felt the effects of Harvey just like everyone else, and just like everyone else in the Houston area, they need help. So if you guys have a chance to go day tripping down there, go to Tomball. Let those merchants know you love them. And of course, I'm joined by co-host Todd White.
Howdy, folks.
Yep. And but you know, let's go ahead and jump in. So you guys do a lot, from Mesquite Creek to Veteran Outdoors to, you know, going and helping with hurricane relief. So introduce yourselves just a little bit.
Hey, I'm Cody Hurt, and we got Brad Stripmatter here.
So yeah. That's us. There we go.
Yeah.
Give us a little more.
It'll speak for themselves. I mean, their stories will speak for themselves on what kind of guys these guys are. So tell me a little bit. So y'all are native Texans?
I am, yes. I grew up in West Texas, and Brad
define,
and I actually met back in college.
West Texas,
West
where?
Texas. So West Texas, we're going to start little and go big.
All right.
So an hour south of Midland is a little bitty community called St. Lawrence. So that's where I'm from.
Okay.
But I went to school in Garden City, which you won't ever heard of that either, and graduated from Stanton.
Yep.
So I just told everyone I'm from Midland.
There you go.
No Stanton. I know Stanton. Garden City, though, that one's always kind of baffled me, because there's probably, like, no gardens out there. Are there? Is it like a little oasis? I imagine, like, the only things that grow in West Texas are cactus. You can have cactus gardens.
Yeah, but we also have big farms out there, so maybe those are big gardens.
Okay, yeah, we'll count that.
But interesting fact, so Garden City's in Glascock County, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's named after George Glascock.
Yeah.
Which Georgetown is also named.
Yeah. I was going to say, they raised you here naturally, right?
That's right.
I'm sure you grew up always going, someday I'll live in Georgetown to honor George Washington Glascock.
Absolutely. So, the next place I'm living is Washington State. Yes.
State. Yeah. There's a Washington County.
You can also live in Laredo and celebrate George Washington's birthday.
Yeah, there you go. Yes.
Different George Washington. I don't know why y'all didn't name this place Glascock's, because Glascock's be a great.
Easy.
Yes. Easy.
That might be, the next thing. We might have something in the works already. So.
All right.
How about you?
I grew up all over. My dad was in the Air Force, and he originally grew up on a small peanut and cotton farm up in Pilot Point, which is in Denton County.
Yeah.
And so Texas was always home. But I went to high school in Virginia, California, and Florida, and then came back to Texas for college because I got in-state tuition here because my dad kept his residency.
Oh,
so
nice.
I went to Southwest for a couple years and then finished up at U of H and lived in Houston for about 12 or 13 years.
Oh,
back
wow.
in the good old days, and it was Southwest Texas.
Right,
that's right.
I can't refer to it as Texas State.
I'm with you, I get that.
So Houston's kind of got a sweet spot in your heart.
It does, yeah. You know, my wife and I got married there, had two of our three kids there, had a lot of good times in Houston. I love living there.
Yeah. So I want to go ahead and jump into what's been transpiring the past few weeks. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, you guys going down and helping. I thought this would be, you know, we were going to do a podcast about y'all's, you know, veteran affairs in Texas and all y'all do to help there. But with Hurricane Harvey, I think we've all seen something that Texas has never quite experienced before. We saw a response unlike anything I'd ever seen before. We saw some of it, I guess, looking into Katrina when those boats hit the water, but never anything like to the scale of what we saw in Texas. And you guys were on the front lines. I remember seeing Cody and just having, just being proud that I knew you, and Brad, you two, just guys that were willing to kind of go down there and help, because y'all joined what's been dubbed now the Texas Navy, got your little, you know, aluminum boat, and went down there and saved lives, which is nothing short of amazing. So let's start at the beginning of the story of, you know, as the hurricane's coming and once it hit, when did your heartstrings start moving? It's like, I've got to get down there.
You know, I don't think either one of us really ever thought that we were going. You know, we had so many events going on here at Mesquite Creek that, you know, that's where we were going to be.
Yeah.
And Sunday afternoon, I got a call from my brother-in-law coming from West Texas. And he says, hey, we're coming through. We're headed to Houston. We've got a boat. We're going to pick you up. We're going to go rescue people.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. So, you know, I didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
But at that point, I decided, hey, if I'm going to get in, I'm going to go all in. And mm-hmm. I like to be in control of the situation. So I put it out there. I said, hey, look, we're going. I need a boat.
Yeah.
And so I called a game warden buddy of mine. He said, come get my boat. We loaded up that night, and we left out of here about 10 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so 10 p.m., you leave. You get to Houston at what, 1 a.m.?
No. So terrible, terrible traffic, you know, with all the rain. Yeah. Well, not traffic, but terrible rain.
Yeah.
Right. So they're closing roads behind us, literally.
Oh,
we're going through cops. They're closing the road. And now I'm talking I-10. I'm talking beltways. And so we end up going into Friendswood. We pull into Friendswood at 4:30 a.m. that night.
Wow.
Went immediately out onto the water.
In the dark?
In the dark.
Oh,
yep.
Man. So what drove your brother to say, I'm going to come from West Texas to Houston?
So he has a lot of experience in the military and search and rescue. He actually has a search and rescue team.
Uh-huh. Oh, cool.
And so they just needed more bodies. And he's always going to be at the forefront of whatever it is. You know, that's serving people. That's just part of his heart, too.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's cool. And Brad, when did you get involved?
So Cody either called or texted Sunday night. My wife and I are laying in bed watching, you know, all this unfold on TV. And he said, hey, we're going. I said, all right. And so I get up and I start throwing gear into my bag and packing stuff up. And my wife was like, what are you doing? I said, well... we're going to Houston. So I waited until the next morning. I had to get the kids on the bus and stuff in the morning. My wife works for TxDOT, so she was obviously having a pretty stressful week too. So we got loaded up. Toby and I got loaded up the next morning and started making phone calls and found a friend of a friend in San Marcos who had wave runners and a John boat. And
wow.
So we rolled down there, never met these guys, and they hooked up a trailer with two wave runners and put a John boat in the bed of the truck for us and sent us on our way. It was pretty crazy. So we're trying to communicate with Cody and Wes on the way in to figure out where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, just trying to figure out how we're going to get to where they're at. And
yeah, that's amazing. I love it. Isn't it just like a Texan to not necessarily wait for permission to do something?
Right.
It just, like, the storm hit, and the neighborhoods were flooded, and we were all sitting there watching, oh, people are stranded in their homes, and for people to just go, well, then let's go get them out.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So I talked to some other people who brought boats down there, and they had to try four or five times before they could find a place to get on the water. And then other people who tried to bring boats down there, and the cops turning them away saying, we are crowded with boats. We're flooded. We can't handle any more boats. So how did y'all find a place to put in?
Well, I mean, it was a mixture of both, really, for us. So since we were an actual member of a search and rescue team,
mm-hmm.
so we were able to work with law enforcement to get in a kind of priority.
Okay.
But what had happened is we went to Friendswood first, and there just wasn't a huge need for us there. There were so many other boats there.
Okay.
And so we were listening to this little app called Zello, and Zello was telling us, hey, Katie needs help, Katie needs help, Katie needs help. My wife's grandmother and her aunt lives in Katie, too. So I thought, hey, what a better place to be, you know, in Katie, actually helping people that might know my aunt or grandmother and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And at some point, we really kind of just did our own thing. You know, quite honestly, we had 15 guys from the Georgetown area in West Texas. And we said, you know what, we have a lot of guys that want to do good, want to help. Let's go find a place to put in. So that's what we did. And then my grandmother's pastor had a list of all these people in his church that needed to be rescued.
Uh-huh.
So he supplied us with all these addresses. And on the way to pick up these people, we ran into more people. And so we were inundated with people from 7 a.m. when we got on the water until 7:30 p.m. until we got off.
Wow. And so, Brad, same with you? Did you join them in Katie?
We met up in Katie, yeah.
Okay.
That was obviously easier for us to get into as well, because we were trying to figure out how we were going to get to Friendswood and figured out it probably wasn't going to happen.
Yeah,
so
okay, yeah.
We got in, we met up with some guy, we stopped in Sealy to gas up and figured it would probably be the last time we'd have a dry, clean bathroom to use and all that jazz. And there was another guy in a truck who'd kind of been following us on and off on I-10, and he pulls in, and I think he saw the Veteran Outdoors sticker. He's like, "You guys veterans?" Toby is, and so we told him what we're doing. He's like, "All right, can I link up with you guys?" So this guy, just random dude at a gas station, joined us. And then we get to Katy and just staged in a parking lot somewhere waiting for these guys. And another truck pulls up and says, "Hey, can I come help you guys?" I'm sure, yeah. So right when we got to that parking lot, Cody texted and said, "Hey, here's an address. These people need out." And we were like 2 miles away. So we said, "All right, well, let's go figure out where we can put these things in the water." And we did, and about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes later, Cody and the rest of the guys showed up, and it was nonstop after that. We were in that neighborhood for 2 days.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. How many people did each of you have in your boat over the whole course of the ordeal? Oh. Did you ever keep track? I mean,
how long were you guys there total? That's the first 2 days we talked about. Just
yeah. So 4 days total.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I know we went over 500, but after that point, I don't know where it ended up. It could have been in the 700s. I don't know.
So wow.
It was just, so the way that it worked, we would pull up to where the drop-off zone was.
Okay.
And we'd have six.
And are the cops and the fire department running drop-off zones for boats, or you just said that water looks deep enough?
No. So we had cops, running people from where we were dropping them off to different areas, different facilities.
Yeah.
Shelters.
Different shelters, yeah. But there's also a lot of civilians doing that. You know, guys with like jacked up pickups that would drive into a certain point to where our boats couldn't get into anymore.
Yep.
They would load up into these pickups and they would be, taken on up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. In the middle of a storm, you necessarily don't have time to coordinate, but it sounds like all the guys and the helpers just kind of found a method that worked.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
To get people out as fast as possible. So walk me through a little bit of you get on the water in the dark, and your plan is, let's just go up to the house, I'll hop out of the boat, knock on the door, and yell for people?
Well, a couple of different things. They would hear us, they would hear the boats.
Uh-huh.
Or we had whistles that we'd blow.
Okay.
And people would literally come out through a window, they'd wave at us, they'd signal somehow.
Uh-huh.
And if we were on our way to pick up somebody else, we would put, write down or just remember where that place was.
Uh-huh.
And come back and get them on the next run.
Wow.
But yeah, we would put in, we'd back our pickups up until we could actually get our boats floating.
Yep.
And sometimes you couldn't, so you had to literally pick the boat up with four or five guys, move it into the water, and then walk it out until it was deep enough to start it.
Okay, yeah.
And then we would go just with a couple of volunteers on each boat. That way we could haul more and more people instead of rescuers.
Yeah. Filled up with six rescue guys with the best of intentions. You can only fit two people on it or something versus a captain and a helper, and then you get more people. That's nothing short of amazing, guys. And so you load the boat up with someone, and what would you say, like, these homes, were you in an average of 1 foot of water, 2 feet of water?
Honestly, anywhere from 18 inches to 20 feet.
20 feet.
So the very first rescue I went on, it was a two-story home.
Uh-huh.
And so I could see it on my Google Maps, but we couldn't physically see it in real life. And it was because we were about 15 feet in 15 foot of water.
Wow.
And so we were up to their second floor. And so we were in their tree canopies around their house, and their house was surrounded by trees.
Oh my gosh.
So there's literally no road to get into it. And so we had to make our own road through the trees.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you're talking about a two-story house, and it's flooded up, halfway on the second floor.
Yeah. So you're going through big old oak trees.
That's insane.
As if it's like swamp scrub brush.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly right.
That's nuts.
That's insane. That paints a whole different picture, really, because I don't think you saw stuff like that on the news on a regular basis.
I mean, the news cameras could only get so far.
I saw normal stuff, but, that's a whole different picture in my head now.
Wow. Wow. Okay. And so were these people climbing out of windows to get on the boat? Did y'all have to get out of the boat swim to them or to walk them? Because, 2 feet of water is one thing. You could wade through it. 15 foot of water is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
So how do you handle that?
So we had a swimmer. That was actually the water was really rushing on that house. It was really flowing. And so we had a swimmer that jumped off with the rope. And he swam to their balcony and then pulled us in.
So they were sitting on their balcony kind of waiting for help?
Yep.
Wow.
But the rest of the places that, had 5 feet of water, the helper on the boat would hop out, guide the boat up to wherever we were going to get the people out, whether it was through the front door or through a window or whatever, and get the boat right there. Because people were bringing luggage and pet carriers and, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So we try to get the boat as close as possible without hitting submerged fire hydrants, submerged cars, mailboxes, you know, there's just all sorts of stuff that you just couldn't see.
Right. So you mentioned, I never even thought about, you know, you hit your prop on a submerged fire hydrant, you could be done.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, emergency rescue mission over, and suddenly you need to be rescued. So what all were y'all navigating in the water beyond those things? I mean, like electric lines, alligators, like what? I mean, maybe not in Katy. They're not too far from the alligators. But like, that's a whole nother element to it about trying to safely do something like that.
Yeah, it's a good point. So the very first rescue we went on in that house, it was a two-story home. So I come around the corner, and there's a power line sitting about 6 inches above the water.
Yeah.
And in the type of boat I'm in, I can't throw it in reverse. It's a power drive, so it's either engaged going forward or it's not going.
Okay, yeah.
So I shut it down, but I knew that we were toast. So we had to go across that line no matter what. And thank God it wasn't hot, or else it would fried us.
Yeah. It aluminum boat nonetheless, so it's a big conductor, and you're just in a frying pan at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So, any memorable stories that stick out? I mean, I know the whole thing is kind of memorable in your mind. Is it just a blur in the past now, or do you think you still see 500 faces?
I still see quite a few of them. I mean, so in order to leave my kids, I told them, I said, look, I'm going to take a picture of every single person I put on a boat with me.
Uh-huh.
I said, I want you guys to see what I'm doing while I'm gone.
Yeah.
And so I took a picture of literally every single person, you know, with their permission, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had some really good times with the people. I know that might sound crazy, but it was a beautiful experience for me. Okay. So we had people that were emotionally distraught.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, sometimes the very first time that they've seen their house underwater is whenever we picked them up and we started driving away.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really emotional on so many different levels.
Yeah.
And we would do fun things with the kids or, you know, I had a couple of people that were pretty upset, and I was like, have you guys ever been to Venice? Let's just pretend like we're in the canals. And so I started singing to them in the best Italian that I had. So it was about pizza and stuff. But, you know, it was just trying to change the moment and make them understand that these are material goods. What's important is in this boat right now, and we're getting out of here.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and if you look at Cody's pictures, every single one of those pictures, the people are smiling.
Yeah.
As they're pulling away from their house that's underwater in a boat, and they're smiling. You know, it's such a positive experience, and I don't think a lot of them really quite understood how bad it was until you pulled off of their street, you know, their little side street in their neighborhood, onto like a main road like Mason that's completely underwater. And then they would look back and go, wow, this is really bad, because most of them still have power. So they're sitting in their house, you know, some guys are like, I was catching up on Game of Thrones and, you know, stuff like that.
Wow.
That shocked me when I heard that on the news, that some of these places actually still had power. Houses are, you know, underwater, 5 feet, 6 feet of water in the house, and lights are on and things are working. That just blew me away.
Yeah.
And then back to your point about the smiles and stuff, you know, it's also a certain amount, I'm sure, shock that they were in, that the reality of what just happened hadn't fully set in. There's that shock and denial, and
for sure.
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you a really cool story real quick. You were asking earlier about, you know, whether we could get in and get out of places and being denied. So on the last morning, we were actually denied several places, and it started getting frustrating because we wanted to be on the water.
Yeah.
Right? But it's all God's timing, right? So finally, we get on the water, and we get to this area where no one's been yet, and I circle the entire neighborhood, and I don't see anybody. Well, one of our other boats comes in. He says, have you checked this cul-de-sac? No, I haven't yet. You know, so we pull on. He goes and checks this cul-de-sac. Well, he finds two people in chest-deep water, and their house is on fire.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're in such shock that they're saying, hey, we don't want to leave. So these two guys, it's Toby and Travis. They're great friends of ours. They go in there, and they physically pull these people out of their house and save their lives. But without God's timing,
yeah,
they wouldn't have been in the right place at the right time.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So they're just in this kind of point of shock, and they're willing to, like, go down with the house. We're not leaving. This is it for us.
Exactly.
And I'm sure now, looking back, they realize that how crazy they were at the time, but how can you think straight when that much is going on around you?
Well, and I think a big thing for the wife was the cats were in there.
Wow.
She had three cats. One of them she had just found that morning.
Okay.
And, you know, floating around or swimming around or something, and grabbed it. And so Travis and Toby pulled them out, and she was, you know, yelling about my cats. And then one of their neighbors, who was like walking his stuff out in a cooler, You know, yeah. You're going to walk a mile out to dry land, goes in there and gets cats. I mean, it was crazy. And I was up in a burning house, goes in there and gets the cats. And I was up on the kind of where we were launching boats, and Cody calls and he says, "Hey, have you heard from Toby and Travis?" The last thing I heard, they had radioed they were in that house that was on fire, and the people didn't want to leave. So at that point, we didn't really know if Toby and Travis got out or what. And so I find some firefighters, and I'm asking them, and it turns out the couple that they pulled out was standing right next to the firefighters. And the couple didn't even remember Toby and Travis. They remember the guy who got the cats.
Yes.
But it was right at that moment, I said, you know, my friends went in there, I just want to know if they got out. And she just, whatever it was at that minute, she, like, I think the gravity of the situation hit her. And she realized that not only is our house underwater, but it's on fire.
My gosh. That's, that, these.
Those two things don't mix.
Right.
In the brain, I'm like, wow. Wait a minute.
It's hard to even visualize how that happens, but.
Right. Well, then how do you get the fire trucks to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And then all those hydrants are submerged.
Yeah, you're not going to put that out.
So there was a guy from Arkadelphia.
Yeah.
A volunteer firefighter or a firefighter from Arkadelphia who had a jet boat. He turns the boat around, tilts the prop up, full throttle, and they put the fire out with the jet boat.
It was incredible.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's nuts. I hadn't heard that story.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, to see such a—I mean, any loss of life is a serious matter, but the numbers were so small, and compared to what we think they should have been. Of course, every human life is an important life, and so it's sad to see anything, but how many lives were saved is what's truly astonishing with the response to this. And I heard something that 80% of the hurricane response is faith-based, and I know you guys are men of faith. Surely that drove these decisions to go down. Cody, I think you said it. You said it best on one of the Facebook posts. I said, listen, we're all working for the same boss.
Absolutely.
And it's more than, you know, working for the search and rescue team of our local law enforcement. You know, there's a bigger boss to it. Tell us a little bit about how your faith made it easier or harder, or you felt more compelled to do that.
Well, you know, I think the majority of the guys that went down there, exactly like you said, are it was a very faith-based decision. You know, it was I have a lot of confidence in my Lord and Savior, and he's not going to put me in a situation that I'm not supposed to be in. You know, it's his timing. Uh-huh. He's going to put the guys to your left and to your right for a reason. You know, and I never take that for granted. And so we just live in every single moment, and we're there to serve other people. And you know, so we were in the right place at the right time, and it was just absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's just what was so neat about it. So there were no colors, there was no religion, there was no race, there was no politics. It was just people loving on each other. And that's why I can say it was an absolutely beautiful disaster, you know, because, you know, you erase, somebody had a Confederate statue. You know what? Who cares right now?
Yeah.
You know,
this
is about loving each other.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it takes something like this to bring us all back to our roots and to our beliefs and what really matters in life.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I was blessed with the opportunity this past weekend to go down to Bridge City, Texas, which that's where I'm from, Southeast Texas, and helped a woman, you know, rip sheetrock out and insulation and all that nasty work that happens after a flood people don't realize. And you realize just how ephemeral and worthless kind of the material things we put so much value in are. And when you lose it all, it's like you said, what's important was in that boat. It was the life, it was the people you're surrounded with, not the things. And it's hard to rebuild, and these people have a long, 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 long road ahead of them. But at the end of the day, they're going to be happier. It'll help them refocus. And I pray that they feel comforted throughout it, that they realize where we should really put value in life.
For sure.
And get past the materialism of America and the divisiveness of it all, because gosh, I mean, our country's never felt more divided post-election and moving forward. And then you saw something like this, that when it matters, we can lay all that aside. I hope we just keep doing that.
Oh, for sure.
Every day.
You know, the other cool thing, so whenever we'd pull up and we'd bring these people up to the drop-off zones, what was neat, it was almost like a NASCAR pit stop. So you had other volunteers that didn't have resources like boats and stuff like that. So, but they had gas, or they had cheeseburgers, or they had water. You know, yeah. And you literally pulled up, and you had a couple of guys out there that would catch your boat. Other guys would help your passengers off. Uh-huh. Other guys would come up and fill your gas tank up with gas, whether you needed it or not. Yeah. And then you had these kids, you know, with bags of cheeseburgers that their parents bought, you know, out there handing them out to volunteers.
Oh, that's awesome.
And what's funny, so I just have this weird thing about people helping me. I don't like it. I don't know why. It's just hard for me to accept that.
Yeah.
And at one point...
I'm with you. I totally get that. The same way. It's rough.
I don't know why that is, but I accept it out there. You know what? This person's here to help, and I'm denying them that service.
Yeah.
And so I started accepting, and it was incredible. And what's funny, you lose track of time while you're out there, because if you're sitting there not doing anything, there's somebody that could be dying because of it. You know, and so it's literally pull up, turn around, go. Pull up, turn around, go. And so you don't eat, you don't drink.
Oh, yeah.
And so those kids literally probably saved our lives, you know?
And you would have passed out and not known it.
Absolutely.
I mean,
best cheeseburger of my life.
Yeah, it was. McDonald's.
And, yeah, but that's everybody found a way to help. Yeah. Right? Every night we got put up in people's houses that were dry and, you know, people that we didn't know, as friends of friends of friends type thing. And there was one night we had, you know, one of our friends from West Texas called their friends and said, hey, I've got like 10 guys who need a place to stay. And they said, yeah, send them, we got them. And then that 10 turned into 12, turned into 14, turned into a little bit more. And you know, we're all sitting there feeling bad because more people just keep showing up. And they're literally walking around with a laundry basket doing our laundry because we just grabbed the first things we saw when we left the house. And like I said, we felt a little bad because we just took over these people's houses. But they said, no, this, we don't have a boat. We're not out doing this, you know. So in addition to what they had done at their church to help out to set up a shelter, they, you know, basically set up a shelter at their house for us. And they said, this is our way to help. Mm-hmm. You guys are out doing something that we don't have the resources to do. And that's what made them, you know, a big part of the team. And it was just an amazing thing.
It's awesome.
And thank God for them with their washing machines, because literally, like, I had one pair of pants, one pair of underwear, and I completely forgot my toothbrush, too. So so I used their toothbrushes.
Oh, no, man. Not really. That's awesome. I mean, I can't say thank you enough, and I'm not, like, you know, on behalf of Texas, thank you. But, like, I am just personally proud to call both of you guys friends. Mm-hmm. I felt overwhelmed with... pride in our, and I hope it's a godly pride, like, but how our state responded, and I want this to continue as we recover from Harvey, because it's not over yet. And people may listen to this podcast 6 months from now, and I guarantee you it's still not over. There's a lot of work that has to be done, but hopefully your stories can inspire other people the next time something like this happens, because it'll happen again. Maybe not on this level, but something like this will happen again, that we all will lay aside whatever's keeping us back from jumping in. And there's always a way for people to serve. God will open a door, whether that's passing out cheeseburgers or filling tanks of gas or jumping into the fray like you guys did. There's always opportunities, and there still are. So thank y'all. Thank you all for sharing your stories with us, man.
You're welcome.
It's awesome.
It was a privilege.
Absolutely. Very rewarding. We're blessed to get to do it.
Awesome.
Cool. We'll definitely have you guys back to talk about veteran affairs, too, at a different podcast. I still think it's a really important topic, for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, so. Absolutely. So stay tuned. You'll hear more of Cody and Brad in the future. Thanks to the city of Tomball for making this all possible. We love you guys. Find someone you can ask about how to help with Harvey recovery. Of course, there's ways to give financially. There's also ways to give your blood, sweat right now. Find a church, because a lot of the churches are heading up relief efforts, you know, whatever. Jump in. There's 1,000 places to do it. So just do it. All right. Love y'all. Bye. Come to you, amigos.